the panel.
The first question is, how do we evaluate the evaluation? And where's the evidence that the evaluation?
Now, not everybody. We don't have time for seven responses. So do you have a particular person in mind? Would anybody like to volunteer? The question was, how do we evaluate the evaluation? That's a hard one to start with, isn't it? Where's the evidence?
We just made evaluation. Get rid of it. But if you
want to put it back. No,
do
you
need another chair?
No, thanks.
Yeah, I suppose for me, the question I'd ask is, why would you want to evaluate the evaluation? Because the point of evaluation is really to see if you've achieved the outcomes and the impact that you wanted to have. For me, if I was going, well, if I wanted to, are you wanting to evaluate the evaluation to get a good evaluator? Or are you wanting to know whether you've spent too much money on the event? So there's a whole level of sub-questions to that question that make it difficult to answer. But for me, it would be about choosing someone who knows what they're doing to do your evaluation. That way, hopefully, you're going to get a good quality evaluation. But the point of evaluation is to work out whether you've achieved the impact.
Any contribution?
If I just speak with a social accounting head at this moment, you have a set of social accounts. You can open them up at any stage. Anybody can go through them and ask a question about how did you do that? Why did you do that? Why didn't you do this? How does that make that? Et cetera, et cetera. So in a sense, I suppose that's a product that can be evaluated.
I'd like to get through the major questions first and then come back for the supplementary so that everybody's included. Thank you. Second facilitator from somewhere. Thank you.
Our group was interested to ask why the presenters this morning chose the method they chose, and also the issue around scale, you know, to scale the approach for a small group. So our question is, how would you choose an effective and appropriate methodology for a small organisation?
Okay.
You can do it in groups.
For me, with Fourth Sector, we did a thing called Prove It, which is a NEF evaluation tool. We did the Local Multiplier 3, we did the Social Accounting, and we did SROI. So we chose our methods, models, tools, approaches, processes by experiment, and that was how we did it.
Would you say you were small? How small is small?
We turned over about $5 million. We had 60 staff.
So
I don't know, whether that's small or big in terms of... We were medium-sized, okay, in terms of...
That's the difference between the two countries.
We were medium-sized. We were seen as an SME compared to some of the other social enterprises in the country. And I suppose part of the thing for me, there's probably several answers to your question, David, that within the UK, there's two organisations, the Charities Evaluation Service and Evaluation Support Scotland, and they have this process called the Weaver's Triangle. It's a very basic log frame, triple P type approach, and that's the recommendation for introductory organisations, small organisations, one or two staff, to really build that into the foundations. For us, we ended up, when I was at Fourth Sector, using SROI because it was proportionate to where we were and what we wanted to do with it. I think somebody said earlier on, asked me the question at lunchtime, we use social accounting and we'd never use it again. Not because we didn't like it, but because it just took too much time, energy, resource, effort compared to what we actually got out of it. And so it was, for our size of organisation, it was too much and actually almost caused the nervous breakdown of the serious mental health problem for the person who was doing it. And for a mental health organisation, that's quite disturbing. and she vowed that she would never do it again. So for us, it was that point of, it was just too much work for where we were at. SROI was proportionate to where we were at. But we only did it on part of the organisation.
Anybody else who considered? We are a small organisation, and we started off using different methodologies because it was directed by the funding bodies. Well, not yet. Have a go at this. Triple P didn't work for us. We then did log frame, and then listening to Kim talk this morning, the SAA process is a natural progression on from log frame.
So the two things are really closely linked. I mean, you use a log frame methodology to start your SAA process. So the two, there's synergy between the two processes. It's a natural evolution. But SAA is a really huge process, and it would make sense to do it, you know, every sort of the end of each funding cycle. And given that most funding is a 3-year funding cycle, it would make sense to do it at the end of that cycle, but you wouldn't do it on an annual basis. But then the two sit closely together, because we use LogFrame to evaluate existing projects now that fed into the SAA process.
Jocelyn, Kim, did you? Are you a small organisation?
Well, probably it's because I had to work in front of large groups of people like this, often in a former life of getting a design document given to you, fly to a country with a different culture, a different set of laws, a sector you never worked in, and you had to try and elicit some stakeholder agreement out of it. And the log frame is a very simple process of asking the questions, well, why are you doing that? What's your strategy? What's your baseline data? What are your indicators? Basic, really basic stuff. But it worked for the whole bunch of people you don't know. And so then I just saw the real benefits, and we use it in our own organisation, projects, programs, etc.
Jocelyn.
Thank you. I guess Yantan is a small organisation. We've got 21 full-time employees, and I guess we didn't choose the methodology. I think the methodology chose us. We had people around us who just came along at the time who had a method that was good for us to try. And rather than tackle the whole organisation, we broke it down and used it for just two of our enterprises. So I think the key message is, it doesn't matter what methodology you use, as long as you're asking the right questions.
Simply, I guess Pathways Foundation utilised the log frame. As I said earlier, Westpac was a major supporter, and they introduced that to us. And the reason why I guess it worked, and we did end up choosing it, and we still use it, is because we have such a myriad of programs. So many, about 40 programs running every year, and it's a nice controlled way of having that in a way that we can be able to track and update, so it just suits us from that end.
And now the funder's perspective, because this funder in common has had an influence on a couple of the organisations here, but with different process, framework, method. Charlie?
Sure.
Wearing your Westpac Foundation.
Sure. I think just quickly, I would say that rather than the size of the organisation, it's probably more important where they're at in terms of their own thinking about evaluation. So you could be a small organisation like Beyond Empathy, and part of the reason why we chose them was because we could see from from the relationship that we had that they understood and were at that point they were ready to take that journey in terms of understanding evaluation. Whereas you could be a large organisation, which doesn't really have an evaluation culture and hasn't really used it. So I would think of it more as where is the mental state of the organisation rather than the physical size.
Thank you. The next facilitator's question.
Our question.
Sorry?
Our question flows from that.
Does it? Okay.
Yeah, so and basically flow on from the idea that the degree was evaluation and the way the funding and delivery of services is going.
So it's resource intensive.
Yes, yep. And also the question was around small organisations. What's their long term future given that sort of gone and having to justify itself? So the question is what is the future of small organisations?
Are you assuming that measure and impact is compulsory?
Make a comment on that? I don't know if that's working. It seems to be in. I think I'd go back to what Jenny said, talking about what the Productivity Commission's trying to do. If you can have a broad enough framework where you can locate your organisation and what it's doing within that framework, then you can almost adapt what you're doing as long as it's robust and you can demonstrate that you're actually using a process or a framework that actually is reliable and provides you with reliable and valid data. It doesn't have to be sophisticated. I mean, we play around all the time by taking bits out of this process and putting it into that one because the organisation says, well, we want to do this, but we can't do that right now. Having said that, I think there's a very important role for governments and other funding bodies to understand better what is needed to support small organisations. At the moment, I think that's done very, very poorly. And again, if you said to me what would be the most exciting and the most challenging job you could have in your life, it would be working with governments around taking the concept of whole of government and relationship with community sector from rhetoric to reality. I think that's a big, important step.
Not compelled. I think, echoing the point, I think a lot of the stuff around impact measurement really relates to funders. And I said this to someone at lunchtime, that for me, funders don't take impact measurement seriously. And so that doesn't matter whether it's a large or a small organisation. And until they take it seriously and resource it seriously, then we're not there yet. And so, for example, with Full Sector, the organisation I work for, we had four members of staff who worked in our finance department because we had to produce an annual audit, finance audit. We had to get our finances right. We had no one who was solely responsible for impact measurement, although we were a social purpose organisation, because funders will fund you to get your finances right. They won't really fund you properly to get your social impact proven properly. So I think that's one issue around it. I suppose the controversial point I'd want to make about small organisations is, I think there's not, one of the problems, and again this is a UK perspective, but I suspect it's the same here, there's not a death rate in the non-profit sector. And so you have loads and loads of new organisations, but organisations very rarely die off. And that's probably one of the unhealthy things of the non-profit sector. Mm-hmm. And actually, for me, if you looked at the private sector, I know you can't pull a lot of lessons from them, but people, good ideas are bought by bigger organisations in the private sector. That doesn't happen in the non-profit sector. What happens is big organisations who tend to be almost unable to be innovative get money to be innovative and fail to do it. Small organisations who are innovative don't get funded. And actually, there should be something where big organisations can buy small organisations. And that, for me, would be the future of small organisations, or a lot of small organisations. Controversial and slightly tangential.
Rather than buying out.
Yeah.
Some sort of consortium.
Yeah, exactly.
We've definitely got
provocation.
Definitely not for sale. That's kind of terrified me.
Remember the question?
Yes, I do remember the question. I think first things first, and it's, you get lost because it's constantly meeting a funder's line, but you, evaluation or measurement first is for us, to make sure that we're doing a good job, to make sure that we are actually improving or influencing change in the lives of the young people we serve in our project. That's first. And we do it to make sure that we're doing that. And if we're not, because we prove that we're not, then we change. We have the ability to change what we're doing in hope to continually make that change and do what we actually say we're doing. And I think we just, whether you've got funding to do it or not, we're fortunate in that we do. But if we didn't, I'm convinced we would still do it in order to make sure that we are doing what we say that we're doing. I think we have to just always remember that.
Are you saying that's going to ensure your longer-term viability? Because the question's about what's the purpose.
I think it will. If we actually, I know that what we do is good, and if we continually ensure that we're doing that and continually improve our process, I hope that we will be sustainable. I'm sure we'll be sustainable. We have been so
anybody far. Else to add or something new?
Well, not so much something new, but actually just to reinforce what Kim said, that, you know, we've had situations in the past where we have not been funded because we can't prove certain things about our evaluation. So it absolutely goes to the point that once you can show your worth and the credibility of your programs, you're going to attract money.
The question, so do you feel confident about your future as a small organisation?
I do. I feel like we've got in place what we need to do to now translate those into parallel.
Okay. Are you a facilitator?
I'm not, but with respect to Robbie.
Kevin. I told him you should be Robbie. Yeah.
However, you know, I would strongly contest some of the assumptions that you've made in your commentary. And I'd be concerned if that contest wasn't put on the table.
today. So, as I say, it's my opinion. I think it's an opinion based on trends that you've got government going for larger and larger scale contracts. That's a trend that's uncontestable. I think you've got uncontestable, and actually there's research that just come out of the UK in terms of new philanthropy capital saying that a lot of non-profits are run on the ego of the chief executive, not to do with actually making difference, and that needs to be factored in. And so those two things, for me, say there's not a death rate. You actually need, for healthy sector, organisations that are failing to deliver need to be stopped in terms of what they're doing, to allow the ones that do deliver to flourish, to grow, to develop. If you don't have that, then all you're going to have is large organisations that stifle the sector. So now, I think it's a big...
It's good, it's on the table.
Yeah,
it's all on the table.
And as I say, it's just my opinion.
And it's good to have some provocation.
Could
we have another...
Yeah, our group, I think, will build on what the conversation that's been... occurring so far. The issue that we were talking about was in the tools that were presented, there seems to be a lot in common with normal strategic planning processes. The question was, why is social auditing seen as a separate process when it could probably normally be built into, you know, strategic planning as you do it anyway?
Thanks. It's actually not a separate process, and it very much is. I mean, what you tend to do at the end of the process is to start with a strategic plan and say, well, we've found out now what's going on, what we're doing well, what we're not doing well, and let's either feed that in to our current strategic plan, or let's, if we've got a lot of things we want to change, let's rejig it or start another one. So it shouldn't be seen as separate. It should be a smooth transition.
I might add to that. I think what Kevin said before about all these different labels that we're putting on these assessment processes, they're all tools.
Mm.
And they're no different to the tools we've probably been doing for the last 20 or 30 years in the sector. But the importance is that maybe we need to look at some consistency. Maybe that's what these conversations will generate. It's some interest in, well, if we're all measuring the same things, are we using the same measures? And start to talk about that. But I think it fits right in with strategic planning, and it's one of the reasons that Yarn Team took it on. Was because we were looking at strategic planning and looking at our engagement strategies and looking at, well, how are we going to look outside of our organisation to help others? And therefore, this was the right tool at the time.
I just reinforce that. I think there's the principles underlying all of them are pretty common. Probably in the last 12 or 18 months, I've come to the view that a lot of plans aren't made without good baseline data. I mean, people have well-meaning objectives, there's a lot of narrative and text, and they mix up cause and effect and etc. So it gets very hard to disentangle. if you base it on cause and effect and you've got good baseline data, then the whole process is a lot more transparent. And if you base your assumptions around data and research done by others, then that becomes your learning system. Because you can say, well, we assumed this 12 months ago. Now the situation's changed. Well, that data, that research is no longer relevant. There's better data, so your assumptions are also incredibly important.
Next one, please.
The first
thing,
we
handed
out the three questions, that's kind of touched on the first two in some ways, but
it's too anarchic, three questions.
We have three equals. Anyway, the third one was a really practical one about suggestions about to talk about how small organisations, particularly about how organisations might go about resourcing this, both in terms of money and in terms of skills and in terms of other things.
Mm. Good question. Will we start with the funder?
Well, I mean, I think the point of the finger at ourselves first, or the funders do need to put their money where their mouth is and understand that evaluation takes time and money, and if they want the organisations that they fund to undertake these kinds of processes, that they do need to fund. Not only in terms of money, but also providing some of the non-financial skills, whether that's in terms of workshops or buying in external expertise. So I think that's one point. Before that happens, though, I think these kinds of things are good, because the funders won't start doing that until, I guess, there's a kind of a critical mass of organisations that are a bit more open to the idea. So it's a bit of a, you know,
Do you think enough funders are aware of the changing context that's out there around this?
I think some of the key ones
the
are.
The big ones
yes.
are.
So that would be my view on it. The other thing is that there are other resources that you can take advantage of, like in terms of student university faculties and so on, using corporate volunteers as projects on these kinds of processes. The advantage of, say, something like social auditing and accounting is that because it is such a long-term process, it can be divided up into quite specific chunks of work. So the stakeholder engagement part, the survey design part, and there are lots of graduate programs with keen students who want bite-sized projects to be able to do. So that's another option.
I might just add, people ask me a similar question lunchtime, but most of this stuff's in the public domain. So, you know, if you want to learn about log frame or whatever, there's heaps of it. All the big organisations, the funding agencies, etc. There's lots of stuff on it. I'm sure there is with the others as well. So, you know, it's a bit like you pick up a tennis racket and still play tennis without being coached. If you want to get better at it, well, then you might have to find some resources to get coaching or find some like-minded people to help each other.
And I think several of the questions have alluded to the allocation of staff time to do it, and that's a little bit more than coaching, isn't it? So, and that's what some of the smaller organisation representatives are asking too.
Then it probably gets down to leadership and the political will within the organisation.
Which was going to be my point. I think if we're saying to have these conversations about, you know, about small organisations being concerned that governments are going to enforce these sorts of assessments in order to get funding, then I think as organisations we can stand up with one voice and say, well, when the government gets their act together and can report on their outcomes for the money that gets invested, then that's leadership. Show us how to do it. You know, put the time and the effort into getting your own governance right before you start to impose a system on somebody else.
That's a small ask.
Thanks. Just following up on, I can't remember who said working together, I think there are lots of opportunities for much more cooperation between organisations than I see at the moment, and I think there's lots and lots of shared learning that could go on. And if you're talking about getting someone like a consultant in, then you can maybe share the cost four or five ways rather than one organisation doing it. And I think there are lots of more innovative ways of trying to address this issue.
Thanks. Next question.
Not a question, it's a comment.
Okay. We'll let you because you're the productivity.
Take advantage of it. Thanks. It's just been really interesting about this issue of overheads and the. I know a lot of organisations are very concerned because you know, you want to see all the donation dollars go to the activities, to the good cause, rather than overheads. Mm-hmm. And I think we've got a real challenge for evaluation as long as that perception of evaluation is just overhead, it's a waste of money, remains. So what you've got to do with your evaluation is make sure it adds value. Demonstrate, it's not just about showing that you're doing a good job, it's about doing that job better. And until there's a sense that that money is well spent on doing the job better, then you're not going to get public support or donor support for spending more money on evaluation and the like. So it's a bit of a chicken and egg. You kind of got to do it to demonstrate that it adds value in order to justify doing it. So I sort of, you know,
there's
I don't
also
know,
a cultural, but there's
it's
also
a cultural thing
here
issue
where the sector has to challenge the validity of full cost recovery in the same way as the private sector is allowed to do. And there's been a movement that has successfully, I think, prosecuted that case in the UK. You can't do your work if you don't have somewhere to sit and do it. You can't do your good project work.
So
anyway, that's... And the next question, please.
Hi, we've heard lots of success stories today. Has anybody been involved in working with a not-for-profit that has been through a process like this, and perhaps they have determined that they're not having as great a social impact as what they thought they might be? And what have they done? Have they been addressed that? I mean, Kevin, you said that in the UK you haven't actually seen smaller organisations fall away than not falling.
Yep. I think we
thank you. Yes, sitting in the room, there's a couple of people from an organisation, a very good organisation called Streetwise, some of you are familiar with, that undertook a social audit process and decided, for a whole host of reasons, not just because they undertook that process at all, but they were not going to continue with the organisation. There were other extenuating circumstances, and I don't know, Jackie, whether you want to make a comment because you were actually involved in the process.
Yes, I mean, well, the interesting thing was, so I was a project manager at Streetwise Communications and came on board once they finished their social accounting audit. And what was really interesting was it showed us the organisation that it was working really well with its stakeholders, but where it needed to grow and what it needed to do in the future wasn't financially sustainable at that time. So taking on board what's been discussed by the panel, and that interesting thing about a death rate, the board actually made the decision that it was more important that it actually closed its doors because it couldn't make the leap to becoming a financially sustainable organisation that could grow to what it could be. So that was an example of, and it was fascinating, Streetwise has been evaluated by death as well, but 23 independent evaluations over 23 years, great street credibility, blah, 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 blah. But actually what it consistently showed, I think, and it talks about evaluation is, I think sometimes it wasn't asking itself the right questions, which is, well, if we're doing this well, where will we go to next? And we missed, unfortunately, for a whole bunch of reasons, not down to anything, but I think we missed new technology, and we're just too late to be able to, as an organisation that was involved in communication, be able to work with communities around new technology at that time. So it's fantastic to see organisations who've kind of gone on and done that.
Thanks, that's a very helpful reflection, Jackie. I'm really conscious of the time. So, want another example?
We are definitely a different organisation having gone through the process. We've, you know, cut some programs back, we've scaled some deeper in community. We decided not to scale one of our most successful programs nationally. It really changed the thoughts we had about where we were going. It changed those thoughts, and we've in some ways pulled back to less communities, are deepening our impact. We've changed staffing positions. So because we knew that in some cases we weren't hitting the targets that we said we were hitting. So it was a process of not, fortunately, closing the doors, but certainly recognising that we needed to re-look and re-shape where we were going and what we were doing.
Thank you. Next question. We haven't had the whole groups yet, have we? I'm counting. I think we've only got seven.
It's one down here now.
It's kind of... we've only got one funder on the... Here, but but the group that I was with was concerned about the financial implications of social impact on, and so the question was about, well, what's it worth to the funder, you know, like in, as a percentage of a, you know, of a funding, you know,
the application for a grant.
What's it worth, you know, is that going to change in the next few years, probably, you know,
look, we get asked this all the time, and it's a hard one.
Yeah.
The quick answer would be, from a funder's perspective, the more important or significant the nature of the funding relationship is. So in our case, as I said, you know, it was what we called a tier one. So we funded them a significant amount over 3 years as we did with Pathways. With those organisations, I guess, there's a higher expectation that they will take on board some of these kinds of processes, or at least be able to demonstrate impact. With some of the smaller organisations and projects, I guess it's not that we don't see it as important, but we understand that there may be more constraints there for those organisations. The reason I say that it's not an easy percentage, like some people say, like, should it be 10% of the grant and so on, is because sometimes if you're putting forward a pilot project, and the pilot project is critical that you can demonstrate the effectiveness of that pilot, because then you're going to have a big project based on that. Sometimes the evaluation may cost more than the pilot, or pretty close to it, because that's the nature of a pilot, because you're trying to use the pilot to demonstrate effectiveness. And at other times, the evaluation might be much smaller. So I guess it depends on the strategic nature of the project sometimes, and also where you're at as an organisation. So I know that's not very helpful, and you can read guides that say, well, you know, it should be anywhere from 5 to 15% of the total value of a budget. What we say is make sure that you budget for the cost of the evaluation into the application to us, and also talk about how you might you know, how you're going to go about doing it, and then if there are some issues there, then we may try and sort of assist with that.
I think for me, again, I'm using examples from the UK, but I think that the education of funders and people in government giving out contracts is probably the biggest challenge in terms of doing this. And I'll give two sort of very quick stories. One of the points, we were running a partnership project in Scotland at one point, and we had a German woman who worked for us, and she just completely flipped out one day, went into total German mode with us, going, I can't bear this doing this work anymore, and went and did a big calculation for us, which was based on the fact that we had five partners, and between the five partners, we required eight monitoring and evaluation reports, because each of the partners wanted their own report. Then as a partnership, they wanted a separate report as a partner, because none of them would accept the other funders' reports as having any legitimacy over their report. None of their reports actually helped us as an organisation actually manage the project, and our board wouldn't accept any of the other seven reports as useful. And so she calculated that we spend 21% of our time doing reports instead of delivering the actual thing. And so for me, a big education about funders around what they're actually doing. And I think one of the things that surprises me is when you look at Logframe, social accounting, SROI, they all have in common this notion of stakeholder engagement as a key principle, and actually that should mean engagement with the funders as a stakeholder, engagement with the government as a stakeholder, engagement with the clients as stakeholders, and you should be able to design one monitoring and evaluation system. It's not impossible, it's just people, there's a vested interest in people not doing it because of their own political games, and so that's a big thing that needs to be done in terms of changing the attitudes of funders.
And I think there's an opportunity for us at the Group of Social Impact, for UTS, for others who have the capacity and opportunity to meet with government and funders in the course of our work to make sure that this is something that we keep uppermost in our mind. I know it's something that I think is absolutely crucial, because there's no point building capacity in one sector if the other sector's not ready to meet it. Joanne, have you got a question from your... What was asked? So is there anybody's group who hasn't had an opportunity to ask?
We talked about evaluation being used as a measurement, and one of the questions about measurement is that it's a comparison. So we wanted to throw in the idea of, what about one universal tool that we all use across all sectors, across governments, privately funded organisations, so that we can compare things?
Good question for the last question.
Comparison opportunities there, it's some savings.
Interestingly, Jeremy Nichols, who's the chief executive of the SROI network in the UK, is an accountant, and he does a whole session on SROI training about the history of accountancy development, and it has taken something like 300 to 400 years to get from when they first started to have accountancy to what we actually recognise as standard accounts now. So I don't think it's impossible, but we're probably about 10, 20 years into that 300-400 year process. So, and that was when I was doing work for the UK government, that was their big utopia. Can we get one tool that we can measure them all with? It was sort of like Lord of the Rings type government policy making. And that's what I said to them. Like, you know, this is a long journey, and we're at the start of it. You know, you won't have it in a decade, you won't have it in 20 years, but if you're not doing something to look at the commonalities, then you're never going to get there. So I think that you can see it by the beginnings of the coming together and the common language between some of the tools. Ultimately, you might get something 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now, but maybe not, I don't know.
Can I just say, we will be, I think Jeremy Nichols will be in Sydney after the forum in October, so if you can all, well, we'll make it our business to get to you, to let you know, so you can ask him that same question if you like.
I think one of the ways that you can come at this question is looking at what are the important principles that should underpin any particular approach, and there may never be one particular tool, but there might be a set of really important principles that every time you engage with a process, that you make sure that you have each of those principles as a part of that process. And I think that's a starting point.
Anybody else?
Jeremy. Just quickly, I mean, it's, I'm not advocating it, certainly, because I think Foundation's view would be that it's horses for courses in terms of there are different, some of these different approaches are best suited for different organisations. But just quick, if we could quickly look at the corporate sector, it didn't take too long for, I mean, the Global Reporting Initiative, for example, is now considered to be pretty much globally accepted as a common reporting framework, and that's probably happened in about 10 years. So, I mean, take a point, Kevin, on the accounting, but I do think it is possible to probably move in terms of getting agreement around common principles rather than common frameworks.
No, I think we do need to finish, but it would be remiss if I didn't allow just one or two questions from the floor. If there's anybody with something that absolutely hasn't been addressed. At first and then you second. That's it. Thank you. Yes, please.
In terms of the corporate world, I'd just like to put reference to a book called The Good, the Bad and the Ugly by research at UWS. It's really questioning, what I really want to get at is how to make a transition, you know, to what some people are calling the new economy. And the partnership between government and the business world and sponsors. How genuine is that in the agenda of corporate sponsors, you know, to make a significant difference to that kind of transition to a more sort of social, equitable type of economic structure?
And how does that relate to the social impact agenda?
Well,
whether they'll include that as part of it, perhaps?
Yes.
I don't know whether I'll answer this or not, but I'm involved in some projects which are, I guess, loosely defined as corporate social responsibility projects, and those, one of them is a large petroleum organisation in Indonesia, and they do a lot of social impact programs, and they're well known for it. But I guess the driver for them underlying all that is risk management. If they're well accepted in the local community where the resources are coming from and building schools and clinics and whatever, then it's viewed as a win-win situation. You can question the motives perhaps at times, but it does work, and there's more and more opportunities like that happening of public-private partnerships more and more all the time. And CSR dollars expanding enormously.
I'll have to go to the second question.
My question relating mostly to where we go through from here. Given that governments are the primary funders of the social sector and education institutions are the ones that primarily develop the process of government thinking in some respects, apart from politics, you know, where do, as a sector, does the social sector go to try and first create change and then get enough momentum and acceptance to develop and implement that change in society?
Could I challenge one of your assumptions?
Yeah.
That the sector will always be funded by the government?
No. Not always, I said substantially.
Or even substantially. That, well, would be, not. That would be a reflection.
I think it'll be 200 to 300 years before it gets away.
No, I've seen it happen elsewhere, but anyway, that would be one.
Well, that might be way out.
Governments.
Did anybody want to finish on that?
Well, I suppose, picking up the point in terms of just limiting it to social impact stuff, if you look at the work that's happened in the UK, and I think Mark Lyons made the point earlier on around a lot of the stuff that's happened in terms of social auditing and SROI at the moment is coming out of the UK, and it hasn't come from the government. They've actually adopted what the sector has been doing and advocating and developing. So social accounting, I don't know how long it's been around. I mean, I met John like 15 years ago, so it's been around a long period of time. You know, late 70s, early 80s, the development of processes and thoughts about this. SROI came out of America, but then was developed in the UK by organisations wanting to prove their impact, and the government have now adopted it. So I think there is that bit of the campaigning advocacy role of the sector in terms of change that wasn't reliant on the government actually to fund it even in the first part of that. So the government adopt and have taken up. And so whether that happens in Australia, I don't know. might happen, you know, a bit more now in terms of going forward.
I'd like to thank you all for giving us your time today to participate in this, what I think is a very interesting first steps again. I think it's we're on a very exciting cusp in Australia at the moment, where I think government and the social sector, the academic institutions, and some social investors are all coming and coalescing around what I would call, you know, the creation of social value and all the things that lead off from that. So it's been great to have had the benefit of the experience of our presenters today. We thank you again very much. Thank you all for coming as well.